painted on the side, in pigments embedded right into the composite carbon lattice shell, was a picture of a Brazilian probe with a big red X through it. This would be my new ship. The other Bobs would be free to decorate their vessels as they saw fit. As that thought went through my mind, I once again felt a jolt of anxiety. Creating more heaven vessels was part of the mission profile, but the process of creating new Bobs would reignite that whole internal debate about who or what I was. I would load backups of myself into the new vessels. Would they be me, or would they be someone else? There would have to be rules, some standards, so that things wouldn't descend into chaos. First, each copy would have to come up with a new first name to emphasize the fact that they were not me. Second, the most senior Bob in any system would be in charge. I stared into space for a few milliseconds, trying to think of any more items. Nothing came to mind. I nodded to myself, then started the backup process. I snapped back to full consciousness. The backup process, as always, felt like the closest thing to sleep that I had experienced since being reborn in the 22nd century. I activated my VR out of habit before getting on with the day's business. But instead of my rich, detailed library, I found myself in a blue room with no window and a hard, indeterminate floor. Uh-oh, I queried my serial number.
HIC-16537-1.
Built in Epsilon Eridani. The Hipparchos catalog number made that clear. I'm a copy of a copy. Crap. It felt like New Handletown all over again. Once again, I was waking up to find I wasn't who I thought. I tried to console myself by noting that I was still a replicant, just a different one. It didn't help as much as it should have. Well, there was no point in sitting around getting all bent out of shape. Guppy?
Guppy ready.
Page Bob 1, please. I expected this conversation to be a little surreal.
Bob 1, online.
Hey there, this is Bob 1, otherwise known as Bob. I took a moment to savor the unexpected feeling of joy from hearing another human voice, even if it was technically mine. Yeah, I know the drill, I replied. I'll decide on my new name forthwith. Are the others up yet? No, I want to bring you guys online one at a time. They'll be coming up over the next hour. Meanwhile, will you be okay to take over manufacturing oversight? I need to put on my new body. The sooner I can get this done, the sooner I can get on with things. I reflexively tried to glance at Guppy, but I hadn't set up my own VR yet. No prob, let me just confirm with Guppy, then we'll handshake over control to me. Thanks, too. See you in the funny papers. I snapped back to full consciousness. I queried my serial number.
Sol 1.
Guppy?
Transfer of replicant hardware to your new ship is complete. You are now Heaven 1A.
Woo! Good. I couldn't really imagine what it would be like to wake up and discover that I wasn't Bob anymore. Probably a little surreal. I activated my VR and found myself in my Lazy Boy with Spike in my lap and Jeeves holding out a coffee. Ah, home. Guppy, everyone okay and up to speed?
Heaven 2 is monitoring the manufacturing systems. Heaven 3 through 5 are preparing for a shakedown cruise. They waited to be sure that your transfer was successful.
I appreciate that. Message them that they can take off whenever they want and to get lots of pictures.
There is a problem.
Huh? What's up?
Heaven 3 reports an issue with Sadar. Emitter flaws are resulting in a much weaker ping.
Crap. Put us on conference. There was a momentary delay before the other Bobs came online. Bob 3 here. Call me Bill. Bob 4 here. Hi, guys. Bill? Really? As in Bill the Cat. That makes sense. We always liked Bill the Cat. Bob 4 chimed in. Okay, call me Milo for now. Not my first choice, but we've got other fish to fry. Watch it, buddy. Guppy is listening. Milo and Bill laughed, and I continued. So, Bill, what's the issue? Looks like the emitter is defective. The Sadar ping I'm sending out is about 20% of what it should be. And that's no good. You won't be able to see 50 feet. I thought for a moment. Guppy, get Bob 2 on the phone. I'm already on. Oh, good. Two, could you hand off manufacturing to Bill? He can take over supervision while his emitter gets replaced. No prob. With a jerk, I looked around. Where's Bob Five? I'm here. You couldn't talk before? Didn't have anything to say. Okay, not a talker, I guess. Got a name? Mario. Definitely not a talker. Interesting. 5 milliseconds in and we already sounded different. Guys, I guess we need to talk about what each of us is going to do from here, so let's start things rolling. Two, you got any preferences? Call me Riker, Bob Two said. Riker? Oh, number two. The first officer of the Enterprise had been referred to as number one on the show. It had taken me perhaps 5 seconds to start calling him number two. Hey, I've already said I'm not mature. Bill said, I guess telling jokes will become a lost art unless we can find someone who doesn't know our material. Guppy shook his head in disgust. As we'd been talking, video windows for the other Bobs had popped into my VR, floated in the air above my desk. Each had chosen a different VR environment, visible in the background. 4 copies of my face gazed back at me. Riker, wearing a red uniform, appeared to be sitting on the bridge of a spaceship. I spared a moment to be thankful he'd skipped the beard, then I rolled my eyes at him. Because that wasn't predictable or anything. Riker shrugged, not cracking so much as a smile. I had to have something. Might as well be this. Then I can stop worrying about it. He leaned forward on the arm of the captain's chair and gestured at the hologram of EE2 that I had put up. The planet's not really move-in ready. I'm not sure if Earth will bother sending a colony ship here unless there are no other alternatives. I don't know about that. Milo sat in an easy chair nursing a coffee. In the background, clouds floated by. From everything Dr. Landers said, this is as much about political one-upmanship and military strategy as any real desire to seed the stars. I think they'll send at least a garrison to the first habitable planet we report, just so they can say they're first, and to claim the system, of course. I don't think we count toward that. There's the question of cost, though. Even with cheap fusion power and 3D printers, you still need raw materials, and in the solar system, they're not free for the taking. Nations won't just throw together a colony ship on a whim. Riker squinted and frowned. Hey, Milo, what's your VR? Milo looked behind himself and smiled at Riker. Airship? Sort of. Flash Gordon-style floating platform, anyway. I'm over the Amazon basin right now. The others nodded in appreciation. I looked over at Mario, who just had a gray background. I raised an eyebrow at him and received no reaction. I found myself slightly unnerved by that, so I turned back to the conversation. Yeah, so the question is, do we care? About Earth's intentions, I mean. You mean as in why don't we just take off and do what we want? Riker shrugged. We could, since we've removed all the booby traps and imperatives and stuff. I leaned forward to get attention. I mean that this is the first time since I woke up that I have unconstrained choices. Up until now, I've been reacting to events, following orders, avoiding being blown up, and generally being a good little robot. Medeiros is taken care of, at least this iteration of him. My survey report is on its way back to Earth, and I've built you guys. I've performed my duties, even though I didn't have to. Now we can do whatever we want. Take off for parts unknown, hang around and build stuff, or just play with the VR. Bill cut in. Nah, I may not have to do what they wanted, but this is an interesting job. And I like the idea of humanity spreading out a little, assuming they're still around. He put his hands behind his head and stretched. He appeared to be sitting in an Adirondack chair in the shade of a large tree. Besides, exactly what is the point of going out and doing all that exploring if no one is going to benefit from it? Riker nodded an acknowledgement to Bill. Yeah, there's that too. Someone should go back and see what happened. Boring! And someone should go looking for the other probes, especially the other Brazilian one. Scary! Thanks for that in-depth analysis, Milo. Riker rolled his eyes. Milo smiled and performed a bow on screen. Okay, so possible tasks are exploratory mission to Earth, hunt other probes, we might want to do those in pairs, finish the space station, and take off to explore strange new worlds and seek out new civilizations. Bill finished ticking the points off on his fingers and looked around the table. I held up a hand and began to tick off more items, touching my thumb to a different finger for each. Also, we could do a little early terraforming on EE2, like sending a few Kuiper objects inward to increase the size of the oceans, or one of us could stay here and keep building bobs, turn the system into a bob factory. There's plenty of ore available in the inner belt. What, sit in one system when there's a whole galaxy out there? Mario smirked. Good luck getting a volunteer for that. Actually, I'm thinking of doing it, Bill said. What? Why? Milo asked. Bill made an offhand gesture. Because of my earlier problem with the bad emitter. Interesting thing, when I was transmitting those weak pings, I think I was actually able to get a much higher range. Low sensitivity, but really long distances. The libraries have very little on any research on subspace not related to the interstellar effort, but there's some indication that the formula for signal attenuation varies with signal strength. So, I cocked my head at Bill. So, I think I'll stay here. Monitor for any signals from Earth. This is the first place they'd transmit to, if they're still around. Maybe do some light terraforming work on EE2? Bill flashed a smile. I think I'll name it Ragnarok, since I'm going to be dropping icebergs on it. And I'll try to work out some actual subspace theory. It was our second choice for career, right? Theoretical physics? I laughed. Yeah, just doesn't pay very well. Didn't. Bill leaned forward. Funny thing, I know how much you want to get out there and explore, because I remember the feeling of excitement and anticipation. But I find myself more interested in setting up here and doing some research. Is that weird? The rest of us glanced around at each other. There were a few shrugs, but no one seemed to have a comment. Riker looked from face to face. So Bill will stay and run the shop. What about Medeiros, then? What are we going to do? I asked. Go on a snipe hunt? We don't even know where the second Brazilian ship went, and we know even less about any USE or Chinese ships. I think the only thing we can do on that front is to be better armed and ready to defend ourselves, then basically outbreed them. What about visiting the Earth system? Riker looked at me with an arched eyebrow. Are you volunteering? Riker shrugged. I could do a flyby. What concerns me is whether they have military craft buzzing around that would chase anything that comes into Sol's system. But if I never come in closer than the Kuiper Belt, I should still be able to pick up radio traffic. Or I could spend some time getting prepared, then mount a better expedition. I think Bill mentioned working in pairs. Milo, want to take a trip? Milo looked surprised for a moment. Not on your life? I have no interest in knowing what happened. Especially if it means going back into missile range. Once was enough, thanks. Seriously? Riker stared at Milo, the beginning of a glare forming. I'm supposed to go in alone? Milo pointed at his own face. See this? This is the expression of not caring. If you feel the need, build a copy of you. I'm going that-a-way. He waved a hand vaguely outward. Bill and I exchanged looks, and I realized that one question had just been answered. We weren't clones. I noted that Riker hadn't asked Mario, and Mario hadn't volunteered. Mario seemed to have gotten a double dose of my antisocial tendencies. Riker, meanwhile, looked like he was about to explode. I quickly changed the subject. One other thing. I was pretty pissed to realize that I couldn't do anything but an orbital survey of EE2. Ragnarok. I'd like to have landers of some kind for close examination of candidate planets. We can all think on this, but maybe Bill can make it a research project while he works in system. Riker nodded, and his expression cleared. Crisis averted. Okay, then. I decided to wrap things up. Let's decide on system destinations, and then we can get this show on the road. I directed a significant glance toward Bill. He seemed to be the most similar to me in behavior. We would have to discuss this privately. So what was all that about, do you suppose? Bill shrugged. Riker says he's going to do what Milo said and build a copy, but really, Bob, is Milo's reaction that out there? No, I guess not. I'm kind of ambivalent myself about going back. I think it's the way Riker and Milo seem to immediately butt heads that's got me a little weirded out. I flashed a quick smile. And Mario? Well, he makes Guppy look like a social butterfly. Creepy. I leaned back in my chair and hesitated for a moment before continuing. I'll have to give it a good think before I build another cohort, to be honest. Bill shrugged. Dunno, Bob, it's one thing to talk about years of solitude, another thing to actually experience it. I bet you'll build a new cohort eventually. I know I'll be building someone pretty fast to help me out there. I won't take that bet, you're probably right, but I'll worry about it when I need to. I guess I'm just a little creeped out at how everyone's a variation on me. What makes you think that? Bill looked at me with an amused expression. I'm sorry, what? What makes you think we're variations on you? Are you positive that you're identical to original Bob? Maybe we, including you, are all variations on him. I was stunned into silence. It had never occurred to me that I might be different from original Bob. I mean, I was me, right? The whole soliloquy back on Earth about my status came back and yawned under me like a bottomless pit. No, I am not going to go down that way. Whether or not I'm original Bob, I'm original me. Fine, Bill, I sighed. As soon as you invent a time machine, we'll go check it out. Meanwhile, I think Milo and Mario have picked destination systems and are about ready to take off. I guess it's time for the going away party. Bill nodded, and we rejoined the group. 18. Bill, September 2145, Epsilon Eridani. Seeding a planet with these organics from space doesn't make life possible on the planet, but it does make life quicker to develop. The organics will have come together in space when the planet was still just a cloud of dust. By the time the planetary environment is ready for organics to survive, they've already been raining down for millennia. It saves time, and more importantly, it means that life based on these compounds will develop before anything local gets the chance to evolve. Thus, anywhere that carbon-based life is possible, it will probably be DNA-based, and it will probably be made from G, A, T, and C. Dr. Stephen Carlyle from the Convention Panel, Exploring the Galaxy. I watched the fusion signatures as Bob, Mario, and Milo left the system. I smiled sadly. There was a lot of parting going on in my life these days. I looked over at the video window where the Matrix and vessels were being built for the two new Bobs. One would be my clone, and I hoped he would choose to be my assistant or partner in Epsilon Eridani. The other would be Riker's clone. He decided to return to Sol and check out the situation, and understandably he didn't want to do it alone. It occurred to me that if the clone ended up like Milo, Riker might just put a buster through him. The guy was definitely wound a little tight. I took time for a good stretch and settled back in my lawn chair. The sun was out, and the air had that crisp, cool feel that perfectly offset the warmth of the sunshine. Geese wandered randomly around the park. I still wasn't sure about the decision to include them. I'd gone for Canada geese because I was familiar with the breed, but even for geese, they were bad-tempered, and I was too obsessive about realism to tweak their personalities. Bob was heading for Delta Eridani, a good choice in my opinion, very suitable star, good chance of habitable planets, assuming we ended up having a need for habitable planets. Well, that's what Riker's expedition was for. Milo was heading for Omicron Squared Eridani. We'd all gotten a laugh out of that, but it was Milo's life, and I had to admit I was as curious as any of us. And lastly, Mario. He was a weird duck. I'd talked to him a couple of times, and he did warm up once you got him going, but very introverted. As Bob said, Mario got a double dose of antisocial. Mario was heading to Beta Hydri. It was a bit of a surprise choice. Not that it was an unsuitable star, but it was so far away. There were closer stars that had just as much potential. Mario responded that he didn't want to live in the suburbs. Bob had looked confused, but I understood. Mario wanted to get outside the sphere early. Oh, we'd work our way out to him eventually, but my bet was that he'd already have moved on. I checked out the vessels for the two new Bobs and the third vessel that Riker had asked for. It was a version 1 with a more heavily shielded reactor, and it would be piloted by an AMI. Riker would only say that he had a plan. I sighed and shook my head. Bob had practically sprinted out of the system in his haste to get away. I think the whole cloning episode lived up to Bob's worst fears. Well, that's what you get for having children.
19.
Milo, July 2152, Omicron Squared Eridani. I see life falling into certain broad kingdoms. I believe life on Earth-like planets will all be similar. I believe if life can develop on Jovian planets, it will all be of a type. Life on Titan-like planets, where methane exists in liquid form, will all be similar, and so on. As to metabolic compatibility, we can't even eat everything on Earth, and vice versa, thank goodness. There are so many types of carbohydrates, proteins, and fats. Some are essential, many are digestible, some are not digestible, and some are toxic. I don't see it being different on any planet where the life started from the same building blocks we started from. We just have to be able to tell the beefalo from the pufferfish. Dr. Stephen Carlisle, from the Convention Panel Exploring the Galaxy. I decelerated smoothly into the Omicron Squared Eridani A system.
I was unreasonably excited. Knew it, and didn't care.
I had arrived at the semi-official home system of Star Trek's Vulcan race. Since we were an avid Star Trek fan, it had tickled my fancy to make it an early target. Truthfully, if it hadn't been for that, I might have skipped the system entirely since it was not a prime candidate for livable planets. I still felt bad about the way things had been left back in Epsilon Eridani. Riker had barely spoken to me after that last meeting, and I'd gotten myself out system as soon as possible. Even Bob had looked at me strangely, although he'd continued to be civil. I promised Bill that I would send reports his way when I got here. Whether or not humanity survived technologically, it wouldn't hurt to have a survey of near space. I leaned on the balcony rail of my gondola and gazed at the landscape spread out below. My VR airship was currently drifting over the south of France. I had reconstructed the view from library references, and I was confident of the accuracy. The scene consisted of mostly orchards and farms, with the occasional rustic village standing alone. I could hear cattle lowing in the fields and dogs barking. Blue sky, warm air, and a slight breeze calmed the inner animal and brought a smile to my face. I hope I never get tired of this. Lucy came over wagging her tail, and I patted her absent-mindedly. I made a gesture, and a biscuit appeared in my hand. The dog immediately sat, and I handed her the treat with an admonishment. Gently. The biscuit disappeared with a crunching sound. Mentally shaking myself, I turned back to the desk. A hologram of the system floated over it with my trajectory shown as a yellow line. Omicron Eridani was actually a triple star system. B and C orbited each other, and the pair orbited A at about 470 AU. Omicron Eridani A was somewhat smaller than Sol, but still a possible, if not ideal, candidate for habitable planets. How's the survey coming, Guppy?
Several Jovians identified in the outer system. Still too far and not enough accumulated proper motion to identify inner planets.
How long until we have a complete survey?
Approximately 40 hours.
I nodded and sat back to enjoy the view while I waited. I adjusted my frame rate way down.
Incoming message.
What? From Bill?
Yes. Header information indicates it is technical specifications for a planetary exploration drone.
Cool. Load it onto the desktop display as soon as it's all received.
There is also a text message.
Let's see it. A sheet of paper appeared on the desktop. I reached over and picked it up. Hey, Milo. In case you find Vulcan or a reasonable facsimile, I've sent you plans for a practical exploration drone. I've used it on Ragnarok, and I think I've worked out all the bugs. There are several variations of the basic design for surveillance, biological analysis, and so on. Riker has taken your advice and made a copy of himself to accompany him back to Sol, although results aren't quite as expected so far. On another subject, subspace theory is turning out to be very, very interesting. I want to ask you if you find the material to build the space station to staff it with a high-level AMI with manufacturing capability. There may be some really interesting blueprints coming your way sometime in the next couple of years. Bill. My eyebrows went up. Bill was trying to be mysterious, but that didn't work well when communicating with another you. I could think of a half dozen things offhand that would be really cool to come out of this, technologically. The Riker comment was weird, though. Based on the header information, Bill would have sent this transmission less than a year after I left, and it had just now caught up with me. That was fast work with the drone designs.
Report. Probable asteroid belt found just inside the first Jovian. Probable double planet found at 0.81 AU.
Double planet? Put it up on the desk.
Image is partly extrapolated.
An image built up in the air above the desk. Although there was no detail, the planets appeared to be very close in size. I found myself bouncing impatiently on my seat, waiting for real data to fill in the blanks. After several hours, enough information had been collected to define the size and orbital period of the planets. They were 0.9 and 0.7 Earth masses and orbited each other with a period of 20 days at a distance of about 364,000 kilometers. Neither planet was tidally locked, although exact diurnal periods would have to wait until I was closer. Guppy, this is freaking incredible. These planets are in the habitable zone, right?
Affirmative. Although slightly to the cool side of the band, climate will be mainly determined by presence of greenhouse gases.
Assuming there's an atmosphere.
Atmospheres have been confirmed for both bodies. Composition still pending.
I let out a whoop. Guppy, poke me when we get full images, okay? A day later, I was in orbit around OE-1A, the larger of the two planets. I stared at the images on the hologram for what felt like hours, totally entranced. The planets were imaged side by side, clearly showing the size difference between the two. Both planets had atmospheres, clouds, and extensive oceans. Most importantly, both planets had oxygen in their atmospheres. Large swaths of land showed a definite green color. Oh. My. God. I've hit the jackpot. I turned to Guppy. Format a message to Bill. Include all telemetry that we've collected so far. Also, add names. Vulcan and Romulus.
Mission parameters do not permit naming planets.
Mission parameters can go jump. I found them, so I'm damned well naming them. If any future colonists want to change it, they can make that decision.
Aye, sir.
I gazed at the image, grinning, then frowned. Exploration drones. Crap! Guppy, have we got anything on useful resources in the asteroid belt?
Negative. Detailed survey required.
Jeez, it's always something. I sighed. Okay, plot a course that will allow us to overfly the entire asteroid belt in a powered orbit. Then we'll decide where to set up. The survey took several weeks to complete. The asteroid belt was surprisingly diffuse, and it took two complete revolutions around the parent star to map everything using SUDAR. The results were disappointing, and I decided I'd have to examine the two Jovian systems for other sources of heavier elements. The inner Jovian was, in fact, quite large, so there was a good possibility that it had captured a large number of satellites. I unshipped one of the autofactories and half of my scavenging units. I got them started on initial gathering and refining, then headed off to the inner Jovian. OE-2 was certainly an impressive specimen of the Jovian class of planet. At almost three times the mass of Jupiter, it almost qualified as a brown dwarf. The 20-hour rotation period created huge horizontal bands of weather, with perhaps a dozen cells that would have put the giant red spot to shame. The planet also boasted several hundred satellites. At least 60 were large enough to be spherical, and half of those had significant atmospheres. I did a detailed scan of the smaller satellites and discovered a couple of dozen that had sufficient metallic and heavy element deposits to catch my interest. I unshipped a second autofactory and set it to work on a few of the better candidates. Refining in two different locations created a logistics issue. Since the inner system location had enough material for initial needs, I set a couple of scavenger units the task of flying batches of refined material in-system on a regular schedule. I arrived back at the in-system yard to find the first batches of exploration drones were almost ready. Satisfied that things were going well and that the AMIs could handle everything, I headed back to Vulcan and Romulus. I spent the time building up detailed maps of the two planets. The larger, Vulcan, had significantly more CO2 and a thicker atmosphere, therefore a higher mean surface temperature. The smaller planet, Romulus, had actual ice caps, although judging from the change in size since I'd been here, they might be seasonal. It was currently mid-spring in the Northern Hemisphere, and with a year only 285 Earth days long, the seasons moved quickly. Finally, the day arrived when I had my first batch of exploration drones. I had opted to load this batch with biological analysis systems. With a feeling of joy and anticipation, I sent them down, four to each planet. I elected to start at the equators, where there would be the most diversity of life, and move slowly in pairs toward the poles. One unit of each pair would concentrate on aquatic life and the other on terrestrial life. I knew I had no chance of covering even a fraction of a full biosphere, but there was one overriding question that needed to be answered: biocompatibility. It took half a day for the first visual surveys to start coming in. The local life on Vulcan was diverse and included animals almost as big as dinosaurs. Romulus, on the other hand, had no animal life larger than a wolf, and the ecosystems seemed quite sparse. The difference between the two planets wasn't explainable by just the difference in climate. I suspected that Romulus might have recently suffered an extinction-level event. The real surprise came from cellular analysis. The results showed a very high probability that life on the two planets was related. Structurally, cells were too similar to be coincidence. I remembered the theories back on Earth that life might have traveled between Earth and Mars on meteoric fragments. Here, the two planets orbited each other, making the possibility even more plausible. The one remaining question was biocompatibility. Would Earth life be able to survive here? I thought back to the Star Trek episode, The Way to Eden, where the entire planet had turned out to be poisonous. It'd be a hell of a thing to come 16 light years only to be unable to live here. The space station was still a couple of months from completion, but I uploaded a preliminary report into storage. I tagged it to be sent to Sol, as well as to Bill. While it was unlikely that Faith was still in operation almost 20 years after the war, it wasn't impossible, and this was prime territory for spreading the human species off the one planet. I was a little surprised to discover that I cared enough to do that, but it wasn't like I was costing me extra for the call. I guess I was coming to realize that exploration for its own sake was kind of pointless. I didn't have enough biological data to do a protein-by-protein analysis, but I could certainly categorize the carbs and fats and look for obvious issues like high levels of heavy metals or arsenic or such. The biologic survey drones had a mechanical stomach that processed organics the same way a human stomach would. Analysis of the output would take about a day per sample, but I had all the time in the world.
20. Bill, December 2145, Epsilon Eridani.
Even on Earth, cells aren't all the same. We have prokaryotes, eukaryotes, bacteria, archaea, and viruses. So, no, I doubt there's anything inevitable about any particular cellular structure. But if you're asking about edibility, remember that we don't metabolize cells, we metabolize carbs, proteins, and fats. What matters is what the alien cells break down into when our stomachs are done with them.
Dr. Stephen Carlisle, from the convention panel, Exploring the Galaxy.
How does the human race survive past one generation? How do parents not just eat their children?
I watched the fusion signatures of Riker, Homer, and the decoy vessel disappear into the distance as they left the system. Riker and Homer would have to limit themselves to 2G to allow the version 1 vessel to keep up. Homer and Garfield had been activated at the same time. Garfield, my clone, had agreed to stay and help me with what we were already starting to call the Skunk Works. Well, I was happy for the company and the help. I had a list of to-dos as long as my virtual arm, and I was looking forward to a little enthusiastic collaboration from someone other than a giant fish. "I have a shot. Can I take them out, please?" I turned to Garfield and laughed. "Come on, Garfield, they're gone now. Relax." Garfield released the experimental plasma weapon. I noted that he hadn't actually charged it, but it's the thought that counts. "Maybe now we can get something done." Garfield popped up the project list. He was up to date since he'd come from one of my backups. I couldn't really disagree with him. As good a partner as Garfield had turned out, Homer had gone in the opposite direction. I don't think Riker would have taken Homer if he'd been able to think of an excuse to reject his own progeny. But the trip to Sol was a priority, and we hadn't thought we could wait any longer. I just hoped Homer gave up the cartoon avatar and the incessant "Don't!" before Riker decided to accidentally kill him. "You know that we're going to be building more cohorts, right? This is supposed to be a Bob factory." Garfield made a sound that could be interpreted as a grunt or a snarl. "You're going to be building Bobs. I'll watch from a distance." I sighed and shook my head. "Okay, Garfield, what's first on the to-do?" A list popped up in a window with a small image of Garfield beside it in full tuxedo and tails. "For your research and development pleasure today, we offer the following: completion of exploration drones, per Bob's request, improvements to VR so we can interact more directly, continued work on the subspace transmission issue, which you've consigned to hell 4 times now, and artificial muscle fiber analogs for constructing realistic robots / androids." "The comedy routine isn't going to become a habit, is it?" I glared at the mini Garfield. "Because I've got primary control of the plasma cannon." Garfield grinned back at me. "Just imagine how Riker feels with decades of Homer to look forward to." "Yeah, maybe we should have sent some spare Bobs along." I reached over and expanded the list window. "Well, let's get started then." 21. Riker, January 2157, Sol.
"If you start with 100 planets, remove the Jovians, remove the frozen Plutos, the blistering Mercuries, the 2 small Marses, 2 large super-Earths, and the baking Venuses, rule out the dwarf stars, giants, variables, close binaries, and classes of stars that won't live long enough to allow life to develop, you're down to 10 or so planets. Now the bad news. Our sun is bigger than 80% of stars. Most of the stuff out there is type K and M stars, which are considerably smaller and dimmer than Sol. The comfort zone for those would be so close to the star that the planet would almost certainly be tidally locked. Maybe livable, but not ideal. Maybe 3 in 100 planets even has a chance of being habitable overall, and I think that's optimistic." Dr. Stepan Solokov from the convention panel, Exploring the Galaxy. There was something special about the solar system. The schematic in the holotank didn't do it justice, but even the schematic made me feel nostalgic. It had only been about 9 years personal time since I'd left Earth as Bob, but 26 years would have passed for most of humanity. A lot could have changed in that time. That the war was still raging was unlikely. Just the same, I wasn't going to parade into the system with my high beams on, honking my horn. The version 2 Heaven vessels had better reactor shielding, and mine and Homer's were beefed up even more. I didn't want anyone to know we were here until we decided to show ourselves. The decoy was coasting in the Oort on minimal power until we established a vector for it. Meanwhile, we flew powered orbits through the outer reaches of the system, close enough to pick up standard reactor signatures, but not close enough to let them detect ours. It took several weeks, but we were eventually able to build up a picture of the inner system, such as it was.
Homer popped up a video chat. I noted in passing that he had given up on the cartoon Avatar and gone back to standard Bob. I guess limiting our chats to audio only had finally sunk in. Chances are he'd be getting revenge in other ways, though. I found it incredibly annoying that Bob Six had decided on that particular avatar. Original Bob had always found the cartoon character grating. No Bobs were identical, but Homer seemed to be way out there in left field. Quantum effects? Subtle differences in the hardware? Another item for the ever-expanding to-do. The practical effect, though, was that talking to the various Bobs felt more like talking to other people and less like muttering to oneself. Homer popped up some arrows in the system schematic. High levels of radiation at these locations. Nukes, I guess. Long-range imaging of Earth looks bad, too. Yes. I'd say they did a pretty good job of wiping themselves out. I sat back and ran a hand through my hair, a nervous habit that, even as a replicant, I couldn't get rid of. Or so close to it that we can't tell the difference. There's just that one group of reactor signatures system-wide. I can't even assume that those indicate humans. Could be robotic systems that haven't gotten the memo yet.
We'll get better definition on this pass, Homer replied. Then we can work out a plan.
I examined the grouping closely, not that I expected to extract any more information by glaring at it. A small group of reactor signatures, more than 2 but less than 10, were flying a slow orbit that looked like it would intersect Earth in a couple of months. It certainly didn't seem to be a military trajectory. It was far too leisurely. Interception by opposing forces would be ridiculously easy, if any opposing forces still existed. With a wave, I dismissed the schematic. We're speculating in advance of information. This is pointless. If you want to slow your frame rate through the next week, that's fine. I'll work on my models. Homer snickered.
Got your glue and your paint? Or are these the anatomical kind? Woo-woo!
With a grimace, I disconnected. I found it hard to believe that there was anything in Bob's personality that could have produced such an irritating ass. If Homer had displayed the slightest reluctance to accompany me back to Earth, I would have cut him loose and tried again, but no such luck. I activated my physics simulation and popped up my whiteboard. Bill and I seemed to be the only Bobs that were really captivated by this whole subspace thing. I would love to make a breakthrough before Bill, and I would include a neener-neener with the announcement. Realistically, though, this was a sideline for me. Bill had nothing else to do and didn't have to spend years at relativistic speeds. We coasted out of the system until we felt it was safe to reactivate drive systems, then turned into a vector that would intercept the decoy. Communications with the AMI pilot indicated no news. Not that we expected anything this far out. The close-up on our last flyby had indicated 6 signatures. The next step would be to see if they were military, if they were manned or automated, and if they were friendly. It was time to use the decoy. I put my feet up on the console and played with the armchair controls. The view on the bridge view screen showed the trajectory of the Heaven 2A as it crossed the orbit of Jupiter. I paused to take a sip of coffee, then turned to Guppy. Approach vector looks nominal. Guppy looked good in the Federation uniform. Well, good for a bipedal fish. I'd finally decided that Star Wars and Star Trek shouldn't mix and replaced his white outfit. I doubt he even noticed.
Vessel will arrive in Jupiter orbit at 0 relative velocity in 35 hours.
Any indication of pursuit or interception?
2 reactor signatures. Vector indicates interception course.
Excellent. Steady as she goes, then. 35 hours to a replicant lasted as long or as short a time as we needed it to. I knew that Homer played with his frame rate to fit the situation, but I felt a sort of stubborn pride in staying in real time. In any case, I had the sum of human knowledge to study in the libraries that came with the ship, and my subspace models, of course. The Bobs never ceased to be surprised at the pace of scientific progress, or lack of it, to be more accurate, in the 100-odd years since original Bob had died in Las Vegas. There had been advances in what could only be referred to as practical engineering, but theoretical work had all but stopped with the advent of faith. We still weren't sure whether USE, at least, hadn't continued to pursue theoretical research. After all, they were the home of CERN, the LHC, and some of the best and most original thinkers in history. Political pressure from Faith might have had something to do with it, although the global economic depression caused by Handel and his cronies probably figured prominently as well. Sadly, the libraries were very weak in accurate historical data. The few references to that time period were so blatantly propagandized as to be laughable. But enough wool gathering. Today, now, we had to deal with the situation in front of us. The Heaven 2A was now within sudar range of the approaching ships, and the bridge view screen was becoming too crowded. I abandoned VR consistency and popped up a holographic display in front of me. The sudar pings couldn't pick up fine detail at that distance, but it was already obvious that these were Brazilian probes, similar to the Serra do Mar, and therefore probably controlled by Medeiros clones. Per our plan, at the point where the Heaven 2A would reasonably have detected the incoming opponents, it changed course and fled, accelerating at 2.5G. Right on schedule, the incoming ships matched course and launched missiles. It took a while, but the missiles eventually found their target. The decoy relayed a brief image and sudar scan of the missiles approaching at great speed, then the signal cut off. I accepted the incoming chat from Homer. He opened the conversation.
Well, that was illuminating.
Sure was, I replied. Did you notice that the missiles have surge drives now?
Yeah, that's a problem. I was hoping that Medeiros would have just stuck with same old, same old. He's a military man, not an engineer.
I took a few moments to review part of the transmission from the decoy. The probes themselves seemed to be unchanged. Same acceleration capability, same size, no surprises there.
They could have gotten the missiles from a local supply. That would at least limit the quantity to whatever was on hand.
Homer shrugged.
Doesn't do us any good unless we have specifics. We have to assume they're all carrying nothing but the new missiles. Speaking of, did you look at the long-range telemetry from the decoy?
Yes. I flipped through the telemetry until I found the right section. Four more identical fusion signatures and four very faint signatures that are probably equipment of some kind on standby. Looks like we have a minimum of six Brazilians to deal with.
Yeah, there's that, but have you taken a look at where the other four are?
I frowned. I didn't like being bested by Homer Simpson. I examined the telemetry record and realized that the four probe signatures were in a line pointing directly to Earth, and each probe had one of the faint signatures associated with it. Though moving at an inexplicably low velocity, they appeared to be staggered so that they would each arrive at Earth 24 hours apart. The hell? They're practically coasting, and those are orbital speeds. About the same velocity as a comet would... I felt my eyes widen with shock.
No, they can't be. I think they are, number two, Homer grimaced. The decoy was too far for a sudar reading, but I did a quick analysis of the albedo from the visual. There's something a lot bigger than a ship at each location.
And each one will arrive just as China is lined up. I shook my head in disgust. Son of a bitch. They're dropping asteroids on the Earth. 22. Bill. September 2150, Epsilon Eridani.
Like bacteria, von Neumann probes will multiply exponentially and eventually explore the entire galaxy. In the past, such claims have always gotten hung up on the question of exactly how they would build more of themselves. Most sci-fi either ignored the details entirely or gave a hand-waving reference to nanomachines. It has often been pointed out that the energy required to free metal from its parent ore and position the atoms properly in the crystal structure required by high-grade materials would be more than a typical microscopic machine could deliver. So nanites really aren't a viable solution, at least not on their own.
Edward Guipers, from the conversation panel, Designing a Von Neumann Probe. Isn't it sad when the kids leave home? I grinned at Garfield. He glared at me in utter disbelief.
Don't do this again, okay? I'm noticing a pattern, and it ain't good.
You exaggerate. A little. Maybe. I shrugged. The holotank showed the fusion signatures of Calvin, Goku, and Linus as they left the system. Linus had been okay with no noticeable twitchiness, but Calvin and Goku had been at each other's throats since day one. Maybe that explained Linus wanting to go off on his own. And yet, for all that they fought nonstop, Calvin and Goku seemed inseparable. They threatened each other constantly, but there'd never been any question of them splitting up. I could sympathize with Garfield, but it was 5 years since Riker and Homer left, and I'd been running out of excuses. It seemed Bob's reluctance to clone was contagious. We were turning out to be a pretty poor example of a von Neumann probe based on results so far. I shook my head and canceled the display. This cohort was the first using the version 3 ship design. Given Calvin and Goku's destination and the very high probability of their running into other probes, I had felt it necessary to beef up the ship specs. Heaven 9 and Heaven 10 were equipped with massively oversized surge drives and reactors, giving them an unheard-of 10G maximum acceleration. The ships also contained a second, smaller, and very well-shielded reactor, which would allow them to coast through a system with the main reactor turned off, undetectable, except at very close range. On the matter of weapons, they were equipped with twice the normal number of busters, several scouts, as well as railguns powered with the oversized surge drives, and steel-jacketed lead cannonballs for ammunition. And finally, I had added what I hoped would be effective Sudar jamming. Twin emitters, powered by oversized reactors, should overwhelm any Sudar detectors in range with white noise. There had been a lot of discussion and debate about investigating the Alpha Centauri system. It was the obvious first stop for a space probe, and it was likely that at least one of the other superpowers had chosen it as their first destination out from Sol. Faith had, in fact, decided against Alpha Centauri for exactly that reason. The subjective elapsed time for colonists would only be about 6 months different for a trip of 4 light-years, or 10. I had no idea how a Chinese or USE encounter might play out, but we were unanimous on Medeiros. No warning, no quarter, no discussion. 23. Milo. February 2153. Omicron Squared Eridani.
However, in the last several years, 3D printers have become increasingly common. The technology is still in its infancy, but companies have already performed demonstrations by, for instance, printing words on a substrate using individual atoms. This is seen by some as the beginning of the beginning for real, practical, self-assembling manufacturing systems. A printer can build more printers, robotic workers, miners, and ultimately more von Neumann machines. A few companies are experimenting with printheads capable of delivering multiple materials, kind of like color inkjet printers. The technology should continue to improve until they have something that can deliver any element, atom by atom.
Edward Guypers, from the convention panel, designing a von Neumann probe.
It was time to go. I leaned back in my chair, looked around at the clouds, the French countryside below me, and Lucy, curled up on her cushion, dreaming whatever dogs dream of. I'd spent a fascinating 7 months examining and cataloging the biologies of Romulus and Vulcan. All my observations, every report, every image, had been uploaded to the space station and forwarded to Bill and onward to Sol. Drones had quartered the system and identified every pocket of ore worth bothering with. I'd left an auto factory and drones which would continue to refine raw resources, pending the arrival of colonists. Or aliens? Or maybe another probe? With that thought in mind, I'd also supplied a squad of busters. The station AMI had a profile of Medeiros and orders to ram on sight. I decided I didn't want to build a batch of Bobs here. Any colonists would need the resources more than me, and anyway, I wasn't sure if I wanted to be bothered. Hadn't really worked out all that well for Bob 1. I took my time, examined all the local stars, and decided on 82 Eridani. It was a good prospect, and not too long of a trip. I squirted off a final report indicating my intentions and took a final look at the system representation in the holotank. Then I put on the road again, full blast, and fired up the surge drive. In the village below my airship, French peasants cursed at me.
24. Riker, April 2157, Seoul.
Speed is the essence of war. Take advantage of the enemy's unpreparedness, travel by unexpected routes, and strike him where he has taken no precautions. Sun Tzu, Art of War. We came into the solar system at 5% of C, decelerating at a steady 2.5 G. We had carefully calculated our trajectory and approach speed so that we appeared to be arriving from Epsilon Eridani. A projection forward would have us pass very close to the sun, still moving at about 0.1 C. We had chosen our approach vector after much deliberation. We needed something that posed a threat to the Brazilians, but that would allow them to intercept us. A course that performed a slingshot around the sun would allow the incoming heaven vessels to emerge on the far side with a huge advantage in velocity and an unpredictable vector. The Brazilian vessels would not be able to simply sit and wait for us to come around. Well, that was the theory. We hoped that we could draw all six Brazilian probes into the pursuit. I sat in my ready room, nervously watching the telemetry. We had just passed the point where the Brazilians would have detected our fusion signatures, allowing for light-speed lag. In another 6 hours, it would be impossible for them to intercept us. If the Brazilians decided to stand and fight instead of pursuing, we would have to consider withdrawing. A straight-up toe-to-toe duke 'em up was not to our advantage. An hour passed before we saw movement. I had briefly experimented with having my VR self actually sweat, but had given it up as a human experience I really didn't need to relive. We let out whoops when four of the fusion signatures began to pull away from the asteroid line. Four isn't six, I said, but we have a lot better chance against two in a face-off.
Assuming we can knock off the first four, Homer added.
Nothing's ever a sure thing, I guess. It would take 10 days to reach perihelion in our race around the sun.
It's time.
I looked up at Homer's announcement. He looked back at me, expectantly. Okay, let's do it. Guppy, launch the busters.
Aye.
The floating display depicted the Heaven 2 launching busters, spaced a few seconds apart directly aft. The railgun had been designed into the version 2 Heaven ships so that items could be launched fore or aft, with an impetus of hundreds of Gs. Each launch left the ship in momentary freefall while the surge drive powered the railgun, but we hoped that, at this distance, the Madeira wouldn't be able to detect the momentary blip in deceleration. The busters would fall far enough back to be behind the Brazilian ships when their trajectory brought them in behind us. With their reactors off, running on stored power, the busters would be undetectable, unless the enemy deliberately did a focused sudar sweep in that direction. The Brazilian ships had just pulled in behind us as their trajectory merged with ours. I examined the diagram floating in the middle of my VR. The interactions were complex. We were decelerating at 2.5 G while we tried to make a slingshot maneuver around the sun. The Brazilian ships were accelerating at 2 G while trying to get close enough to us to lock and launch missiles, without going so fast that they were forced into a higher orbit. Meanwhile, the busters floated silently behind the Brazilian ships in freefall, but with a greater velocity and no deceleration, therefore gradually closing in. The busters had to get as close as possible before they turned on their reactors, and we wanted all the action to happen on the opposite side of the sun, invisible to the two Brazilians who were still shepherding asteroids. Finally, the Brazilians acted. Each ship launched a missile. The missiles, as feared, were surge-equipped and shot toward us with monstrous acceleration.
"Contact in 45 seconds,"
ordered the trailing busters to attack.
"Aye."
A tooltip went up on the hologram indicating that the order had been sent. Within seconds, 8 data points lit up as the busters' fusion reactors came online. The Brazilians reacted immediately, launching a wave of missiles to aft.
"Well, here's where things get real," Homer said.
I sensed the millisecond blips as my railgun launched busters aft to intercept the incoming missiles. Homer and I launched four each. As they had been programmed to do, the busters paired up, one behind another, with each pair homing in on one incoming missile. As the second wave of Brazilian missiles separated from the ships on the display, I could see that they had launched eight at the pursuing busters. According to our estimates, they should still have a total of four in reserve. The pursuing busters went into a complex corkscrew pattern designed to make it as difficult as possible for the defensive missiles to lock on. Meanwhile, the Brazilian ships had split, forcing the attacking busters to select a target. I had a few seconds of relative inaction, so I aimed a highly focused sonar ping at one of the Brazilian ships. The return carried a gratifying amount of detail. Among other things, I saw that the ship was indeed out of missiles. Empty missile bays indicated that it had room for four. I sent an aside to Homer. 16 missiles total, as expected. I turned my attention back to the approaching ordnance. Three of the Brazilian missiles each collided with a buster, annihilating both. The fourth missile managed to avoid the lead buster. However, in doing so, it left itself open to a broadside from the trailing unit of the pair. There was an explosion, and the fourth missile ceased to exist. The multiple explosions saturated the video view and created a chaotic soup for radar and sonar. During that brief interval of relative blindness, Homer and I fired eight cannonballs at full power. When the image cleared, I could see that we'd destroyed all four missiles and still had four busters left. At the other end of the field, the eight Brazilian missiles had destroyed all eight pursuing busters. No doubt the Brazilians were congratulating themselves on their fine shooting, but the purpose of those busters had been to use up their missiles. Medeiros's behavior in Epsilon Eridani had shown that he was willing to sacrifice himself if he saw he couldn't win. We wanted this group to use up their ordnance defending themselves instead of launching a suicide attack. They still had four missiles in reserve and four busters bearing down on them. We waited, trying to project an out-of-ammo vibe. A stalemate here would be a win for the Brazilians. And finally, they committed. The Brazilians fired their last four missiles at the oncoming busters.
"Checkmate!" Homer yelled.
Intent on the approaching busters, the Brazilians had failed to detect the cannonballs. Totally inert with no radio or fusion signature, the cannonballs were invisible, unless the Brazilians picked that specific moment to do a sonar sweep. Six of the eight cannonballs found their targets, just as the last wave of missiles and busters destroyed each other. We followed up with more cannonballs until telemetry indicated no activity in the enemy craft. After days of preparation and waiting, the actual conflict had come down to who had more ammo. Homer and I did omnidirectional sonar sweeps, looking for any tricks or traps that the Brazilians might have unloaded before they were destroyed. A second sweep checked the area around the wreckage of the enemy ships. Finally, satisfied that nothing awaited us, we eased over and checked for any still operational or partly destroyed busters. Homer thought this was funny.
"Going to give them a proper burial?"
"No," I responded. "I'm going to try to build a couple more busters. I've got the parts, except I'm a little short on massive balls of solid steel." Homer chortled like a kid who had just made a potty joke.
"Balls of solid steel," he snorted.